You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Are friends with fantasy benefits. Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Well, I'm firstly surprised that you didn't warn anybody that they're not allowed to say anything unpleasant about Chris Carter.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
No. We don't bleep out the swear words, but if you say anything poor about Chris Carter, that's getting bleeped the fuck
out. He tries really hard, and when he does make contact, it goes really far.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Well, Chris Carter may only give you power, but he gives me a warm, fuzzy feeling in my nether regions.
And well, that's what really counts in fantasy.
Yeah, I'm more Darius than with you, that's for sure.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Join with me on the new Friday show is Darius and Eli. Darius, how you doing?
I'm doing very well, man. Looking forward to wrapping up these first basemen and talking about, I think we've got maybe one of Eli's favorites in here, so looking forward to hearing what he's got to say about it.
Yeah, well, that may have snuck in on purpose, so we will be talking some Jose Abreu a little bit later, and we are wrapping up the week-long edition on this podcast of previewing the first base position. We've done 30 guys on the Monday, Wednesday, and now the Friday show in total. The Prospect Show did an episode on prospects at the first base position, so, but Eli, how are you?
I'm good. I love me some Jose Abreu, but I would like him off the White Sox and complete this rebuild.
All right. Also joining us today is a special guest. That is Dan Strafford. Dan, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, guys.
Dan, for those who don't know who you are, please tell us a little bit about yourself, where they can hear you, and then where they can reach you on social media.
Absolutely. How dare they not know who I am? But
I know, right?
They can find me on social at Dan Strafford Creative. I know it took me a long time to come up with that on Twitter, but at Dan Strafford works there. I work with Joe Pisapia, who I know is a friend of the program here. We do a show every Tuesday, Thursday on FNTSY Radio, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And I do some part-time work over at fanvice.com doing daily fantasy podcasts, NBA, MLB, NFL, and all that. That's Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Every morning you can listen to that. And other than that, you can follow me on Twitter for bad political takes as well. So I have it all in one place.
Well, we're definitely going to have you back on like in season to talk some DFS, because I know Eli is a big DFS guy.
Absolutely.
So, Darius, can you even play DFS in England?
Not the American sports. They are expanding over here into the kind of, the more popular sports in the UK. But
you have some football, right? You can play some footy.
Yeah, we can do soccer, as it might be called over there. But no, if I actually try and go on a regular, contest over there, then it just tells me that I'm not in the right location. Yeah.
Relocate, please.
That's no way.
I have to move, and then I can play DFS. Yeah.
Well, that seems like a good idea, Darius. Get on that. But let's just jump right into the 10 guys we're going to be talking about today. Start with another guy at the top who's kind of one of the creams of the crop. But I definitely have a question in, is Miguel Cabrera a first rounder in your opinion this year, Dan?
He is the cusper for me. He's the kind of guy who I'm looking at on the turn in a 12, or even if he's there at a 15 team league, he's somebody I feel more than comfortable falling to me if others in the first don't want to grab him. The power and the runs and the RBIs are going to be there again. Yes, we can talk about him aging, and he is. He's up to 33, you're going to be 34 this season. But the numbers are such gigantic separation from the middle or even the second tier of first baseman. I'm more than happy to get to him at the turn. So I don't know that I'm investing a seventh or eighth pick right in the middle of a first round, but if he's there at the turn for me where I can make a corner play, a first and third baseman, or a first baseman and a outfielder, if you're in a five outfielder league, I'm more than happy to get Miggy there.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Miguel Cabrera this year? First rounder for you?
Yeah, I agree with Dan. I mean, the worst average he's had in the last 8 years is .313. He's a model of consistency. He's been pretty much healthy every year of his career except for 2015, where he played 119 games. I mean, you could pencil him in for .315, about 30 homers, 100 RBIs, a good amount of runs. He's about as safe as it comes, and there's a lot to say for that.
Darius, do you agree?
Yeah, I do. I have him right on that turn at the end of the first round. I think Eli hit it with the batting average never dipping below .313. This is what an 80 grade hit tool looks like, and he's shown no sign of that declining as he gets older. So I think he's as dependable as you can get, and I'm certainly happy to take him at the back end of that first round.
Yeah, I've been getting him in a lot of mocks where I've been in the back end of the first round. I'd take him as high as probably 10 or 11. I mentioned throughout this week and all off season actually how shallow I believe the first base position is in terms of overall quality of depth. And so if I can grab Miggy, one of the most consistent first basemen and players in the game, in with my first round pick, I'm totally happy. One of the things that I was seeing early in the off season, I'm seeing a little bit less now, is being able to kind of double tap on first base and drown the pool with a guy like Rizzo and Miggy.
Right.
And if you can do that, I think it sends shockwaves through your draft.
Absolutely. I'm big fan over the past couple of years, trying to game play or draft theory, some drafts here and there, depending on, you know, the buy-in. You don't want to do that in your higher buy-in leagues where you're trying to play a little coy there in the first round or even the second round. But drowning the pool can change the way everybody drafts. And you see where, you know, all of a sudden these runs happen because people get desperate and they see the value's not there. And they're going to, like he said, first base is great at the top and it has some good value, I think, down below. But that middle ground can be a little bit tricky in getting the right value out of that position that should have so much power for you. So if you can go Rizzo and Miggy, or you get somebody else that you really think has that potential upside to be first round value there, I'm not against that at all. And you're setting yourself up for a really power heavy team. Then you can fill in the speed later on.
Definitely. Let's move on to Freddie Freeman, who kind of broke out last season. Dan, do you think that what we saw last year is legit, or will he take a step back?
So the big question is, a lot of people are pointing to Atlanta's second half and saying, look, this offense clicked, and you had Kemp in there, and you had Mr. Swanson come up and table set pretty well, and Enciarte, they believe, could be something there over the long term. I believe in Freddie Freeman. I believe that the past couple of seasons have been a legitimate ramping up of what sort of power hitter he can be. And we heard all about after 2013 and the bloodletting that happened there over 2014, 2015. There just wasn't enough around him to make it happen. Injuries in 2015. I'm all in on Freeman. And I think this is a kid who is going to be one of the best first basemen, all around first baseman and fantasy first baseman this year for us. I don't know if I'm as believing in the Braves as a whole. Matt Kemp is old. Swanson will have some growing pains, and Enciarte is fine. I don't know that he is Ricky Henderson. I don't know that he's going to be this end all be all for them. But I do think Freeman will continue to make the strides forward. I'd love to see the K rate below 20%. But with the walk rate in double digits at 12.8, hopefully rising as well, that K-minus walk is really a great indicator for me of where there's legitimate power, but also enough patience for him to grow that batting average and the on-base percentage.
Darius, do you agree? Are you in on Freddie Freeman this year?
Yeah, I've always been a pretty big fan of Freeman. He's basically hit every season he's been in the majors, and obviously the power has come on, but he's always been a good line drive hitter. Something this brought to mind for me, Chuck, Mike and I were having a debate about Eric Hosmer, And they're actually the same age, Freeman and Hosmer, which seems kind of weird because Freeman's been around forever, but he's still only 27. And I think this is the kind of thing that maybe people expected to see out of Hosmer, and he just hasn't developed in the same way, whereas Freeman, I think, has shown the ability. He's got the batted ball profile. He's been able to make adjustments. I think last year he did try and hit a few more fly balls, and that came at the expense of some more strikeouts, but he also got the 34 home runs, which fantasy players will take all day. So I think Freeman is kind of what Hosmer should be, and he's shown everything I would expect of a sort of young player developing over the years. So yeah, I have great faith in him, and I'll certainly be owning a few shares of him this year as well, I think.
Eli, are you buying in on Freddie Freeman?
Yeah, I'm on board too. You gotta love that he's hitting his age 27 season, had a really great year last year. I love his spray chart. He hits the ball all over the field, 30% opposite field, 37% pull, 34% up the middle. You know, like Darius said, he's hitting more fly balls, which is nice because we need those home runs. The BABIP is still a little high at 370, but he's always been a high BABIP guy, so that doesn't concern me too much. So I don't think there'll be much of a dip in the average. So yeah, I think he's going to take another stride this year.
Yeah, I think there might be a tiny dip in average because, like you said, the BABIP was pretty high. Though he had a 371 BABIP in 2013, so maybe he can sustain it. I think it's going to come down. I think he's more of a 280 hitter, 285, as opposed to a 300, but that's still fine because I think it's coming with 30 home runs. I think the gains he made are legitimate, like you guys said. You know, I'll be interested to see how the new Braves Park plays because we really have no idea in terms of, you know, is it going to play like a pitcher's park or a hitter's park until we see it. But it's not like he was in a great park before. So more than likely, it can only be to his benefit moving to the new ballpark. Let's go ahead and move on to Eli's favorite guy in, like, the entire world, Jose Abreu, who he obviously wants to break up with. Eli, tell me why you want to break up with Jose Abreu.
All right, well, Chris Sale's my favorite player in the world, all right? And I've already had to break up with him because now he's on the Red Sox, who I hate more than anything in the world. But, you know, you guys give me shit for loving Abreu too much, but, I mean, what's not... He's a lifetime 299 hitter. He averages 30 homers and he averages 100 RBIs. Like I know he's not quite as good now as he was in his rookie year a couple years ago, but he's still incredibly solid, incredibly reliable. Hits in a great park. You know, he always seems to go a little bit too late in drafts. You know, you're not getting a 40 homer guy anymore or anything like that, but you're just getting consistency. You're getting reliability, and he's going to put up good numbers. And like you said, Justin, first base it's not very deep these days, so. Yeah, Abreu is one of the last elite first base options you can get, and I'm totally fine with that.
Dan, do you agree on Jose Abreu?
Abreu concerns me a bit with just the trends, right? If you look at his numbers from his rookie season through 2016, all the numbers are going in the wrong direction. RBIs, home runs, K percentage has dropped off, which is nice. Walk percentage dropped, though, too. ISO has gone down. His average has dropped from 317 to 293. Those are all at least red flags enough, but I do agree that Abreu is the kind of guy who doesn't get enough respect. He's the Rodney Dangerfield right now at first baseman. He doesn't get that moment where people are like, oh yeah, I'm comfortable with Abreu. There's always a skittishness to it for some reason. I think he's fine. The one concern I have is what are the White Sox doing this year? Like, what offense do they have out there? How many RBI opportunities does he have with this youth movement? And does he stay there? Is he somebody that by the end of the year is with this team, or has he moved on to another park that we don't know as much about and how he'll hit there? I do think that I'd prefer him, looking at, you know, Fantasy Pros ADP, I prefer him over Daniel Murphy at first base. Like, taking Murphy at first seems like a bad idea, where you're taking a good bat at second base and trying to plug him in at first. I know there's been a home run uptick for Murphy, but I'd rather Abreu over him. I'd rather Abreu over Will Myers at first base. I know there's a lot of people who love them some Will Myers, but I need to see it more often. I need to see more from Myers to trust him as a top 10 first baseman. So I take Abreu over both of them and think that he's plugged in for a similar year this year, and I wouldn't be too afraid of getting him. Let's see, Fantasy Pros has him 61st overall. That seems right, about right value for me for Jose Abreu.
Preach, Stratford, preach.
And he's going about 64th overall on NFBC, the eighth first baseman off the board, right behind Will Myers. I agree with you. I think, and in a lot of the mocks that I've gotten where I haven't been able to double tap on Miggy and Rizzo in the first and second round, I'm grabbing Jose Abreu as my corner infielder and drowning the pool that way. because it starts getting real scary after Abreu. You've got Hanley, you know, if you're in on Hosmer, you've got Hosmer, and then the drop-off becomes pretty drastic. So I've been grabbing lots of shares of Jose Abreu. I love the value this year. I think that a lot of stuff went wrong in Chicago, and for a guy who isn't, you know, an American by birth and in an area that may still be a little bit strange to him, to have all the turmoil going around in Chicago last season may have affected him. So, and honestly, if he does get traded, it probably won't be to a better park, but it might be to a better situation. So maybe it doesn't help his power numbers, but it could help his counting stats, because one of the reasons I think he's downgraded a lot this year is because the supporting cast around him is god awful.
And you shut your whore mouth, Justin.
I mean, let's be honest. When you're going to be relying on Charlie Tilson to get on base for you to knock in some RBIs, it's not a great situation. But I was one of the guys last year that said, don't worry about the surrounding cast with Freddie Freeman. So I would be kind of a hypocrite to then, after Freddie Freeman proved me right, to be saying about Jose Abreu. So I'm all in on Jose Abreu this year. Darius, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I pretty much agree with everyone. I think maybe our expectations were raised a little bit too high by the fact that he hit 36 home runs his first year, but I think he's got a pretty good approach. He's basically a 300 hitter. I think he's made some adjustments as he's been in the league. He got attacked inside a lot, and I think that hurt him early on last year, but in the second half he was 319, 384, 514 hitter, which is kind of much more like what we saw in the first year. So I think the price is great as well. You don't have to pay for him like he's an elite first baseman anymore when he's going at the back end of the sort of fifth round there. So, yeah, I kind of like everything here, and I don't think we need him to return to that first-year form for him to be a value there.
All right. Well, let's move on to Carlos Santana, another guy who had a pretty strong season. Dan, are you buying last year's season from Carlos Santana?
I am. I'm actually a big fan of Santana and think he's going way later than I expected him to so far in drafts this year. Now, again, what we talk about on the show with Joe all the time is ADP this early in the year is a cluster, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's just a mess. You can't really take too much from it, but you can start to learn what some people are thinking. I think he made the great strides in getting his K to walk ratio even. You saw a jump in ISO, so you assume some regression there. Power numbers will probably come back a bit, but for where you're getting him, you'd take, what, 25 home runs, 85 RBIs, and 70 runs scored, right? And that seems more than possible in this offense. With Encarnacion there, if Brantley's healthy, this from like 1 to 7 is going to be the deepest lineup probably. I mean, with Lindor and Ramirez and even someone like Tyler Naquin who can plug and play if Brantley's not ready to go. I love Santana this year. And while I do completely agree the top of first is where it's at, you may want to drown the pool, this guy is a corner infield spot. Or if you do decide to sort of go to other positions you think have more scarcity, if that's your bag and what you're into in fantasy, I think Santana is a decent guy to peg. You may have to pay a round earlier for him. Make sure you get him at that point to get those 25 to 30 home runs. But I'm a huge fan of him this year, and I'm not seeing many negatives comparatively to some of the other sluggers. That K percentage always below 20%. The walk percentage has always been high. You know, OBP leagues, I think he's great. Even if he hits I don't know if he's a 260 hitter. That's where the question for me is. I don't know if he's a 245 hitter or a 260 hitter, and that's a big gap when you're trying to talk about a roto league. I do like him a lot, though, and I think that there's a lot of upside here, and I think this lineup just further bolsters his value in my eyes.
Darius, where are you at on Carlos Santana?
Yeah, I'm a big fan. You know, I love guys who walk all the time. He's got outstanding plate discipline, and I play in a lot of OBP leagues, so he's often a target for me. I think the average is a question, and I would expect him to hit more like the 240 than 260, because he does hit so many fly balls that I don't think he's going to have a great BABIP. He also doesn't have great base running, but he's very consistent, 6 straight years, over 600 plate appearances, and I think the step forward last year with the power is sustainable. So I'll certainly be targeting him a lot in OBP leagues in particular, and I think he's, as Dan mentioned, going at a pretty nice price in the early ADPs.
Eli, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are that we need to stop saying drown the pool. It sounds way too much like drain the swamp. I'm on board with all you guys. Like Dan said, the fact that he got his walk rate to match his strikeout rate, that's fantastic. I'm actually a little bit more bullish on him maybe matching that 260 average. He did that. If you look at his career BABIP, it's terrible. How does he only have a 269 career BABIP? That's got to be one of the lowest of anyone I can remember.
Slow.
I know. I still think he did the 259 average last year with a 258 BABIP. I can see that happening again. So I'm a little bit more optimistic that he can keep the average above the 231 that he had in both 2014 and 2015. And the power spike's great. And, I think there's, 15 first basemen that you can fully rely on. And he's easily in that class, and people don't really seem to think he is. So I love him in the middle of the draft.
I would kind of love to see him ditch switch hitting. And I know that's a difficult thing for someone who's been switch hitting for so long. But I just feel like, and I'm looking now more expressly at the splits to see if I'm just crazy with this. I guess the average is pretty legitimately on both sides, righties versus lefties and lefties versus righties. But it always feels like he has more power from the left side. I might be wrong with that. Home run versus... Yeah, I mean, it's about the same. So I just feel like a guy like this with the power, with the upside, I'd like to see him focus on the left side of the plate and really drive the ball all the times from that side rather than worrying about both. But I'm not seeing enough here in the numbers from last year or the year before to say that's absolutely true. So forget everything I just said.
When is the last time someone ditched switch hitting? Because I feel like there are players that should do it and no one ever pulls that trigger.
Well, Neil Walker should have done it going into last year. I mean,
Pablo Sandoval did it about 2 years ago.
He doesn't even exist anymore. Come on.
And then look what happened.
And then he disappeared from baseball. He's back, boys, though. Come on. This is Pablo's year.
He doesn't bat from both sides of the plate. He eats from both sides of the plate.
That is a joke I've already made this offseason.
Well, obviously I don't listen to your podcast.
Well, as long as you download. Santana's a guy that I like. I think he is kind of the line of demarcation in terms of first baseman that I want. Because if for some reason he's the guy that I'm targeting, because I've gone different directions with my earlier picks, if I don't get him, I'm waiting an extremely long time to get my starting first baseman, because that middle core is pretty ugly. But I think we could see another 30 home runs from him this year. Might take a little bit of step back from last season, but I kind of agree. I'm not going to bank on a 260 or 250 average from... I'm going to pencil in 240, and anything I get on top of that is gravy. All right, let's go ahead and move on over to a guy that I have not been a huge fan of. I'll start with you this time, Darius, since you're a Giants fan like me. What are your thoughts on Brandon Belt?
Well, I think I called him Joey Votto Light when we did the Giants preview, so I'm probably a little bit more optimistic about him than both, but I think that is in a more real-life sense than fantasy sense, just because I don't think he's ever going to hit that many home runs in AT&T. I really like his approach. I really like the way he's been able to take more walks, and I think his higher BABIP is sustainable because he hits so many line drives. So I think he's a safe guy with limited power upside, and that's kind of what you're looking at, really. I don't think you'll have to pay too much for him, but he's not the kind of guy I expect to get too much upside out of either.
Yeah, for me, I've never been a big fan. I've never been a believer that he could sustain any sort of power growth while maintaining the good average. He's kind of, he is, you know, an older version of Josh Bell. And Bell, you can get, you know, maybe 100, 150 picks later. So I've never had an interest in Brandon Bell. And I think the Giants are, they made some comments today, Bruce Bochy did, that they expect Buster Posey to catch less this season and play more first base, which to me either means they're going to try out Brandon Belt back in the outfield, or he's going to be missing at bats, and that to me is very concerning. I was already all out on Brandon Belt, but I really think other people should start thinking about downgrading. Currently going as number 15th first baseman off the board, 167th overall. I don't think he's a top 200 player this year, personally. Dan, what are your thoughts on Brandon Belt?
I think you're spot on. I've always wanted to love Belt. I've wanted him to be a thing in fantasy because you see the approach and you see the possibility. Maybe if he's not playing in San Francisco, 81 games out of the year, he has a better chance to get to the 20-25 home run range. But
we've seen this consistently now. He's a 15 to 18 home run hitter each year. His batting average is what? 275 to 290. He gives you 75 to RBIs, 75 runs, or in that range. That's all fine. That's great corner infield, you know, a late corner infield guy. But I think, to your point, to everybody's points here, this is the kind of guy that has probably more name recognition than you need to go after, even at 170th, according to Fantasy Pros. Like, you can wait on the similar numbers, potentially even from somebody like Greg Bird with the Yankees or Mitch Moreland with the Red Sox. And these are guys who don't have the same name of Brandon Belt, and they don't play as many games per se at first. But if Posey's playing more at first and there are less opportunities, I'm going to wait. I'm going to let someone like Belt pass by and let somebody take him on. Hey, this is his year. You know, this it's happening this year, guys. It's really, he's going to hit 25. He's not going to hit 25 home runs. He's not. We know that. We have to realize that and move on from him being any sort of potential elite first baseman.
Yeah, and I mean, I think he could hit 25 home runs, but I think it would come at a severe cost to his average. I mean, I think you would see him hitting 230, 240, and that's not what you're expecting from him. The problem with guys like these, in my opinion, is these are like industry favorites. There's been a lot of very, very smart guys in the industry that have projected Brandon Belt for a long time to turn into a stud. And there have been so much talk for so many years that people really started believing that this was what Brandon Belt was going to be. And at some point, you have to kind of take an objective look and say, you know, there are certain things that I like, but he has never shown the entire package in the course of his entire career.
You can never show your entire package. I mean, that's terrible. That's a bad plan. I mean, you can't give that stuff away for free.
Well, I agree to disagree.
It's a good thing this is a podcast, right, isn't it?
Yes, right? Not a video cast. Eli, what are your thoughts on Brandon Belt?
I like Belt a little bit more than you guys. I feel like he made some nice strides last year. His walk rate went from 10% to 16%. His strikeout went down from 26 to 23. You know, the home run to fly ball last year was really crazy small. It went from a career of like about 14% to 9%. So I do think 25 homers is possible. He gets on base a lot. He's going to score some runs. I know it's not a great ballpark or anything, but I think he's pretty solid. Justin mentioned that Santana's kind of like the line of demarcation at first base. For me, I feel like Belt's kind of that guy, so I'm a little bit more optimistic that he's going to have a little bit better season.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back right after this from a message from our friend Joe Pizzapia.
It's that time again. That's right. It's fantasy baseball season, and the Fantasy Black Book is back and better than ever. This is Joe Pizzapia, author of the 9-time best-selling Fantasy Black Book series, number one right now on Amazon, on iTunes, and for the first time ever, the Fantasy Baseball Black Book can be held in your hand. Yes, what a beautiful world we live in. Head over to Amazon and buy your hard copy as well today. Baseball is coming. Are you ready?
All right, let's jump back into the first base pool. Let's consider this extra innings, and we're putting a man on second. So, Darius, we'll start with you. CJ Cron, is he a guy that interests you as a late round corner infielder?
I don't know if I can get all the way excited to say interested about Cron. He's got some decent power, and his plate discipline has been improving, but he's still not a guy who takes any walks. I think there's some playing time questions here with Luis Valbuena. And potentially Albert Pujols, although I think they're going to try and have him DH almost exclusively this year, given his plantar fasciitis. So I think there is potential here for a sort of 22 to 25 home run guy if he could play a full season, but I'm not sure I see that. And I think there are probably other guys that I'd rather wait on and take a shot on upside later on.
Dan, what are your thoughts on Cron?
This is the part of any position where you can find merits in these hitters. And I think the point here is that the walk rate is pretty terrible and the K rate came down. But do you believe it? 116 games is an okay sample size. The 113 from the year before, 16 home runs. You don't want to get caught projecting that over 154, 145. That's where we really get into trouble with fantasy, where you try to extrapolate these small samples or shorter season samples and say, well, if he played 145, well, he didn't. And we have to realize that and have to realize the other sides of it, that he didn't see pitchers as often and he didn't have to go through certain travel issues and the different things that happen over a course of an entire season. I don't love CJ Cron. I think a lot of people want him to be Mark Trumbo. Like, they want to make that jump that he's the next Trumbo and I'm going to be on him early and he's going to explode for 40 home runs. I just don't see that here. I don't see that as his profile. I don't see that as the jump forward. I think the Angels offense is a mess, really. The pieces they have don't seem to fit together, really. And I mean, they have the best player in baseball and then a bunch of other dudes who hang out and play baseball sometimes. I think that with Cron, I'll stay away. I think we have other names even on this list that we're going to go through. I'm sure you guys have discussed other late rounders through this week that really stand out to me. That Cron's just somebody that not worth it for me. Take the 275, take the 15 home runs, and I can find it probably from a shortstop in the mid rounds.
Eli, what are your thoughts on CJ Cron?
Yeah, I agree. I've liked Cron for a long time, but I am completely off at this point. I mean, Valbuena's in now. He's on the wrong side of the platoon. Cron is, and he's also not, it's not like he's great against lefties either. He's actually better against righties. His career splits against lefties is 252, 287, 409, and against righties is 273, 316, 472. So he's actually been a good amount better against righties. So this is just not a good situation for him. And like Dan said, that lineup is just pretty much hot garbage. So I think CJ Cron's time as being fantasy relevant is pretty much over.
Yeah, I've been a big Cron fan for a really long time. I really wanted the Giants to take him in the 2011 draft. And they just missed out. He went a couple picks before they were able to grab him that season. You know, I believe there is more power in that bat. I don't believe that the numbers we've seen from him do the kind of the raw power that is in there. The problem is, one of the things you guys have mentioned is playing time. And so the chance that he has to break out is going to have to happen really, really fast, really, really early. And I just don't know if I'm willing to bet on that, and it's only if Albert Pujols misses his time. If Pujols misses some time and Cron can kind of establish himself, get hot, then I think he is he could be a really interesting guy. But in terms of drafting, I'm not going to draft a guy that may not have a spot on the, you know, in the lineup after May 1st. So for that reason, I'm out on Cron. Let's go ahead and move over to Greg Bird. This has been a polarizing guy on this podcast, but not with this cast of characters, and so that's why we're talking about him here. Dan, what are your thoughts on Greg Bird this year?
I guess I have to go full disclosure here. I am a Yankee fan, I am a Greg Bird fan. I loved what he did when he came up when Teixeira was hurt. I don't think he's Tino Martinez. I don't think he's even Mark Teixeira. I don't think he's Don Mattingly. Like, he's not the next coming of the all-star first baseman for the Yankees, but I think he is a legitimate offensive and defensive player in the major leagues that can do enough to be worthwhile. Now, is that good for your fantasy team? I don't know. I don't think that this is necessarily going to be a major fantasy-relevant season from him, but he's the sort of bench bat when playing at Yankee Stadium and facing pitching that it's just not as good, you know, facing the Royals at home. If the Yankees have a 4-game homestand against the Royals or whomever they might face, this is the kind of guy I want to be able to plug and play because he has the plate discipline and he showed it in the minor leagues. He has the pop for that short porch in right field. And he does do enough at the plate to give you a good idea of what he's going to do. Now, you say all that, and then you realize Chris Carter's there now, and Matt Holliday's there now, and you have Judge in right field, and you have Tyler Austin. So will playing time be an issue? I hope not, because Bird seems like a legitimate first baseman defensively, offensively, whereas Chris Carter, you know, he might be able to AC the entire stadium with how much he'll strike out, but it's going to be a situation where I don't want him playing first for the Yankee. I don't want him defensively out there, and Judge is the same way. Judge is going to strike out a ton this year, so I hope Bird's the one they run out there. The one thing that you get into, and talking DFS a little bit more, you talk about position in the lineup, right? You want guys 1-5. Bird's the kind of guy who might bat 7th or 8th. So, again, your upside on a week, you may get 4 or 5 less at-bats from him. And that is something you need to consider when you're playing in head-to-head leagues or weekly leagues, that you're not getting as many opportunities from someone like Greg Bird because of where he is in the lineup. So I like him a lot. I think the upside for a legitimate long... I think he's better than Logan Morrison. But that's the kind of guy that he reminds me of, like a John Olerud towards the end of his career. Somebody who can spray the ball around the park. I mean, Olerud was great. Maybe not the best comparison. But like later in his career, where Olerud was just sort of slapping the ball, hitting doubles, didn't have much power, but still playing great defensively at first. That's what I hope Greg Bird is. So from a fantasy perspective, I don't know if he comes through in the clutch for anybody other than being a bench piece in case of injury or good matchups on a weekly basis or in a daily churn league where you can get him in and out of your lineup. Beyond that, as a corner infielder, I don't know how much upside he has.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Greg Bird?
Better than Logan Morrison. That's not exactly a huge ringing endorsement.
It's not. It's a terrible endorsement. It's just that's the sort of like two-way guy that Morrison should be, that Morrison should have been. Hopefully Morrison can put a picture of Greg Bird up in his office, and that's who he can be. That's probably a better description.
I've never been I'm not as big of a Bird fan as most people seem to be, but I do think where he's going in drafts is perfectly fine with me. He's going really late among first basemen. I think among guys going in that area, he's probably got more upside than a lot of them. And yeah, there's other guys in that lineup, and like Holiday and Carter, but a lot of these guys are injury prone and old, so I do think Bird could get more playing time than maybe we think. So, you know, I think Bird could be a nice flyer.
Darius, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm firstly surprised that you didn't warn anybody that they're not allowed to say anything unpleasant about Chris Carter.
No. We don't bleep out the swear words, but if you say anything poor about Chris Carter, that's getting bleeped the fuck out.
He tries really hard. And when he does make contact, it goes really far.
Yeah, it does.
I think Tim hit it on the head when he was talking about the weekly lineups and the missing at bats. I think there is a situation if you're in a daily league and you've got a big enough bench where Bird is the kind of guy you might want to just pick up late in the draft and slot him in those good situations against a righty when they're in Yankee Stadium, because he can send one over the fence. But this is a guy who was only projected to hit sort of 15 homers a year as a prospect. He's just coming off a torn labrum that sidelined him for the whole season, and we've got very limited sample size of what he can actually do in the majors. I know he hit for a lot of power in that brief sample, but he also struck out a lot of the time. Combine that with the playing time issues, and I think this is a guy that is a pretty big risk for a fantasy team, unless you do have that situation where you can just keep him on your bench and slot him in if he gets hot or one of these guys gets injured, something like that. But I think beyond that, he's the kind of guy who's not really going to be useful enough to fit on most fantasy teams.
I think the one thing that Eli mentioned is that he has some upside that some of the other guys below him doesn't, but I think one thing we're neglecting to mention is the fact that he has some serious downside coming off a shoulder surgery. I mean, we have no idea what he's going to look like when he suits up in spring training. This is a guy that I mentioned on the Monday podcast. You have to really keep a close eye on him during spring training. And I just think it's kind of a lose-lose proposition, because to me, unless he shows he's healthy and can hit for some power in spring training, I'm completely out. And if he does do that, if he goes complete ham in spring training, his price is going to go through the roof. So,
yes.
So I mean, I think it's kind of, you're stuck in a situation that it's not a gamble I'm willing to take. I'd much rather take the guy next, and I've been a huge fan of Chris Carter. so, I mean, you know, you're going to have to take this on a grain of salt. I've been a Chris Carter backer for, God, the better part of, 5 years. So, but I'd much rather have Chris Carter. I think it was a fantastic signing. I'm not worried about the playing time, because you've got old guys in that lineup. You've got guys who have serious injury histories. It will work itself out. Chris Carter will get enough at-bats to be successful in Yankee Stadium. So for me, I'm all about Chris Carter this year. Darius, are you?
I mean, I know this is all going to get bleeped out, but we know what Chris Carter is. He will give you power. He won't give you anything else. Again, this is a situation I'm just not sure how it's all going to play out. And yeah, great if Holiday goes out the first week and pulls his hamstring or something and the playing time sorts itself out, then that's fine. But I'm not sure that I really want to gamble on that happening. And I feel like there's going to be at least a couple of months this year where it's going to be a bit of a mess and you're kind of checking the lineups every day to figure out who's starting for them. So I'm not doubting that Chris Carter can give you 30 home runs if he gets the time, but I think there's a real possibility that he won't get as much time as he has in previous years. And other than that, there isn't anything else to see here.
Well, Chris Carter may only give you power, but he gives me a warm, fuzzy feeling in my nether regions.
And well, that's what really counts in fantasy.
Exactly. Eli, what are your thoughts on Chris Carter?
Yeah, I'm more Darius than with you, that's for sure. I mean, he's a lifetime 218 hitter. He's only scored 70 runs once. That was last year. Like, yeah, the power's nice, but there's more to fantasy than just power numbers. I prefer a more well-rounded guy. Like, I get it if he's falling really late, and I do think that was a great signing by the Yankees, but in terms of fantasy, I think I want to avoid.
Well, you're a liar and a coward, my friend. Dan, what are your thoughts on Chris Carter?
I don't want to be labeled either of those things, so I guess I have to rethink what I was going to say. I for Carter, I agree, real world, in real life, great signing by the Yankees. I do think the point about Holiday getting hurt is a legitimate one, and is one that we've seen many times over with Matt Holiday. So from a not even a handcuff perspective like we would do in football, but from a little bit of insurance, having Carter on your bench if you had Holiday, not the worst idea. I do think, though, Carter will be relegated to daily transaction leagues for me, because much like I think Bird and Holiday, you need to be able to see what the Yankees lineup is and get them in and out of lineups and make sure you aren't stuck with a week where for some reason, you know, Holiday's hot and he's in the lineup, so Carter doesn't get at bats. Or a Judge has a big run, so Holiday's relegated to DHing. And that's going to be a lot to deal with. And there are going to be injuries for the Yankees. They are old and young, so they're going to be the two polar opposites of injuries and underperforming. But for me, Carter just falls into that weird just one category guy. I do have the question for you guys, though. Do we have to rethink power this year finally? Is power finally back that the AL leading home run hitter and the NL leading home run hitter took forever to sign, and that the NL home run hitter signed for what, $3 million for one season? Is baseball back to where power is not at a premium and we can find it enough that these guys aren't of such value that they were even 3 or 4 years ago?
I think we have to do that a little bit, but I also think, I mean, especially in like a fantasy terms, and this is something that, you know, I think I've kind of alluded to, but I don't know if I've spelled it out quite in this way, is fantasy players and the fantasy industry and analysts in general are extremely reactionary. And so they look at what happened in the previous season or maybe the previous two seasons, and they react, and they react drastically. And we saw that last year because, like, if I asked everybody on this podcast what burnt most people in fantasy drafts last year, it was drafting pitching too high, which was like the big talk coming into drafts last year. And so this year, all the talk is, you know, you need to draft speed early, power, you know, there's plenty of power late. You can get power guys. We have no idea how things are going to play if we're going to revert back to the numbers we saw last year or the year before. And with these contracts being doled out the way they are, you may see players who decide, well, it doesn't benefit me to go for the long ball every time. Maybe I do need to start spreading it around a little bit, making sure I'm making better contact. So I think you could see a reversion back in this season.
I think it's a great point.
Yeah. I mean, I think the league is obviously playing it like that. I think, what was it, over 100 hitters hit more than 20 home runs last year. I think it's kind of the opposite of stolen bases, where it's very top heavy. You've got maybe three or four guys who can steal a ton, and then very quickly it drops right down to single digits, and this is the complete opposite of that. And I think teams don't really see value in guys who can hit 40 home runs and nothing else, when they might have four or five on their guys in their roster who they can think top 25. And I think that's kind of going to be the same thing in fantasy this year. And I don't think there are going to be too many teams who are going to go through the draft and get to the end and think, oh god, I don't have any power on my team, because they're going to have drafted so many guys who hit a ton. Whether it carries on this year, and, you know, if the ball is juiced or if it's just an approach thing or what, I don't know, and I'm very interested to find out. But yeah, I definitely think guys like Carter, both in real life and fantasy, are not really going to be that much valued this year by fantasy owners.
Eli, what are your thoughts?
I have no thoughts. I think you guys nailed it. So.
Great insight, Eli. So I mean, I think this is, you're going to see a lot of people, and we've already, if you saw like the FSTA drafts, You saw speed go like extremely early, and the other day someone, one of the big NFBC drafts, took Trey Turner first overall. You're gonna see really weird things like that, and guys like Billy Hamilton, who I love, don't get me wrong, going probably higher than they should. And I think next year we may be talking about the big mistake was everybody overdrafting speed.
Yes.
So yes. I think,
yes.
You know, take the values where they are. Don't I hate looking at a category and going, oh man, what am I going to do there? All the speed guys are gone. There are plenty of speed guys late. You just have to find them. Keon Brogdon, Jared Dyson, Rajay Davis. There are guys around that you can get. And there will be guys that emerge.
Absolutely. And I think this is where the zero RB discussion in football came around, where it was almost an all or nothing thing. And it's not. It's a philosophy. It's going in with this plan. And the whole thing about draft prep is being prepared to pivot, like being prepared to change the way you think. And if you go in thinking, well, I have to get speed early, then you're drafting Billy Hamilton 15 picks before he should go. And I hate Billy Hamilton. If anyone follows me on Twitter, I despise what he is. Now, the average is coming up, becoming a more well-rounded player, good defensive, obviously, defensively. But you guys are spot on that these weird reactions that happen and these polarized, well, I have to get speed because speed's at a premium. It's not really. It's down a little bit, and you have some top-heavy guys, but you have a bunch of guys who steal 10 bases or 12 bases, and that's a difference maker when you have a balanced approach to how you're drafting. I think great points and things that really should go into draft prep this year.
And, I mean, this isn't something we were necessarily going to discuss, but I like the conversation, so I'm just going to kind of push it along a little bit more. The one thing, too, with speed is while speed may be down, you should really be looking at teams that steal. Because there are certain teams that really just push it on the base pass and certain teams that don't. So, I mean, you know, if you're looking for your speed sleepers late, look to the Brewers, look to the Reds, look to the Indians, look to the Padres, look to the Nationals. You know, there are guys on those teams that are going to be going late that could offer some sneaky sources of speed. And if you know, and don't look to the teams like the Orioles who only stole 19 bases a team. Look at for those cheap guys on those teams that steal quite a bit. Let's finish out our last two guys. Dan Vogelbach is a guy that the Prospect Podcast talked about, and there was a variety of opinions. So I'm interested to hear what you have to say, Dan. What are your thoughts on Dan Vogelbach this year?
I'm not much of a prospect guy. I just never have been when it comes to getting late-round value. I'd rather take somebody who I'm more confident in, I've seen do it, and has a straighter line to regular playing time without the possibility of being sent down. With that said, profile-wise, it seems like, some of his pictures on Google Images are utterly amazing and things that should be beholden by everyone. But overall, I think that if he has a straight line out of spring training to playing time, he's worth a late-round look. You have a guy who has the tools, as a lot of people will say, to be a very good major league hitter. With all of that said, though, I just don't see it being a regular position for him. Maybe I'm wrong there, and maybe I'm misreading the tea leaves for the Mariners, but I think this is a team that's win now, and they're not going to let a youngster struggle at the major league level. If you guys see it differently, I'd love to be convinced otherwise.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Vogelbach?
Well, what everything the Mariners seem to be doing, and Jerry DePoto said this himself, is they're really placing a lot of emphasis on defense and athleticism. Now, I know it's only first base, but these are not words that people have associated with Dan Vogelbach in the past. So I think they'll give him a chance to play some of the time, but they've talked about Danny Valencia playing there. Nelson Cruz is the DH, so they can't put Vogelbach there. And they're not going to put Cruz in the outfield because that's what DePoto has been talking about, how much they want to improve their outfield defense. So I think there's definitely some playing time concerns. I think, as Dan was mentioning, they could easily send him back down if things aren't working out. And while I think there is a viable fantasy player in there, I still don't think this is an ideal situation for him, although it's obviously much better than it was when he was in Chicago.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Vogelbach?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's got some upside for how late he's going. But like those guys said, the playing time is a concern. The defense is a concern. The fact that Seattle's competing, like Dan said, they're not going to let a rookie struggle in there is a concern. So, and it's not a great place to hit. I don't know. Vogelbach's fine. He's worth a shot maybe if you're trying to hit a home run late, but I don't think anything, you got to get anything with him really.
Yeah, I mean, for me, if I'm playing like in a really deep OBP league, he's a guy that becomes really interesting because I think he's a guy who can walk 12 to 15% of the time at the major league level and put up really nice OBP numbers. But I don't think he's ever really going to hit very much power. Honestly, I think I am the Dan Vogelbach of my slow pitch softball league. I'm a huge guy that can't hit for power, but walks a whole bunch. So, and I play awful defense. So, yeah, I in that regard, I think he's going to be a fantastic slow pitch softball player one day. But in terms of my fantasy team, it's probably not an option I'm going to take the majority of the time. All right, we're going to talk about Matt Adams to kind of finish this up, only because I needed another name for the sheet, and I didn't want to repeat another one. So, Dan, any interest in Matt Adams this year?
You know, Adams is the kind of guy who we probably got too hot and heavy on when he came and did he hit well, but he did not blow the cover off the ball and wasn't somebody that should have really gotten the following he did. Now they move Carpenter to first, and he's to the bench. I'm surprised he's still in St. Louis. I would have assumed another team might come calling looking for the numbers we may have seen a couple of years ago, the 16 homers, 54 RBIs in 2016. I have some upside. Like, there is some pieces there. Overall, though, you have to be in the deepest of just major league teams. Like, you can't draft minors. You can only draft major leaguers, guys on the 25-man roster heading into spring training only to want Matt Adams on your roster. I don't see him taking over first base. He's on a National League team, so there's no DH opportunities on a regular basis. Yes, they do interleague, so if you want to stream somebody like Adams when they think they're going to DH, they have a road trip of 7 games in the AL, have fun, you know, try to figure that out and see what you're going to do. I wouldn't be wasting fab on him. But I don't see him resurrecting his career. Now, with that said, he is going to be one of those guys you hear early in spring training, Matt Adams, best shape of his life. He shed a lot of weight. Here he is. He's really cut down and he's ready to get his job back. Best shape of his life, folks. He said it himself. Forget that. Like, stop with that stuff. These guys are at a point in their lives where they've been playing baseball round the clock, exercising, like being ready for this. The fact that it takes him to not have a regular job to then lose weight and try to play again, I'm not convinced that's going to change anything for him. I think this is going to be a backup situation. He'll spell Carpenter from time to time, but Matt Carpenter is so damn good. I don't see him relinquishing too many at bats at first base.
Yeah, I think the thing that Matt Adams would need would be multiple people to struggle and then feel the need to move Matt Adams off or Carpenter off of off of first base, and that would be the only way he's going to get time there. And I mean, they've got so many moving parts on this team in the infield that I think they would need two or three guys to really struggle before they would do that. So for that reason, I just don't see he's going to make a lot of playing time. Darius, any chance you're in on Matt Adams?
I am not in on Matt Adams. I see no walks, not much average, and not enough power to make up for it. He's playing behind Matt Carpenter, and I just don't see where the time's going to come from. He's also been on the DL for shoulder, oblique, calf, and quad injuries over the last few years. So I see a lot of reasons to not get excited, and unless you're in the deepest of NL-only leagues where you can pick him up for a dollar or two just in case something happens, I really don't think that he's going to provide much.
Hey, give him a break on those injuries. He's got a lot of weight to carry, all right?
Thanks, Eli. Oh, wait, you weren't talking about me.
Matt Adams stinks. I mean, even when he was basically a full-time player, he never had 60 runs. He never hit 20 homers. This guy's terrible. There's really nothing else to say.
All right. Sorry, buddy. I hope you're not listening to the podcast, Mr. Adams. But that will wrap us up for this episode. Dan, thank you for joining us.
It was a pleasure. Glad to finally make this work, and hope to be back with you guys sometime during the season.
We will definitely do that again, have you on maybe to talk some DFS or just some regular baseball. Again, tell people where you can reach on social media, and then give yourself some plugs.
Sure. I'm balding a little bit. I don't need hair plugs. Thank you very much. at Dan Stravard on Twitter. Find me Tuesday, Thursday night with Joe Pizzapia on FNTSY Radio. App is free. You can also find it at Fantasy Radio. No, that's wrong. FantasySportsNetwork.com/radio. That's the right URL there. And then FanVice.com. I do podcasts and live shows over there. They're a DFS site. Happy to have some people check us out over there as well.
Eli, where can you be reached and what are you working on?
You can find me on Twitter at EliFWFB. And me and you are going to be working on a new podcast.
Yeah, something a little different from what you guys have heard from us. We'll just tease it a little bit here. We won't give it away, but if you are into, you know, maybe a different kind of talk from Eli and I, we've got something coming out probably in the next 2 weeks. Hopefully you will tune in for that, and we will give away more information as we kind of get that settled down. Darius, where can people reach you, and what are you working on?
So you can find me on Twitter at DariusA64. Got a few things in the works. I just had my latest piece go up at BP Wrigleyville about some Cubs non-roster invitees. I got another piece going there next week about their Picota projections. Also previewing the Padres for Banished to the Pens. That should be out early next week. And I've also been doing some stuff over at Fantasy Pros. I'm doing a series about how to use peripheral stats for fantasy. So the first one of those went up yesterday, and I should have a couple more coming up over the next few weeks. So look out for all of those.
And you can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. I had an article go up on FanGraphs. It was talking about my 2017 lottery ticket team. Those were guys being, I did a hitter's edition. I'll do a pitcher's edition here soon. It was guys being drafted outside the top 450 in NFBC ADP that you could be interesting for fantasy this year as lottery ticket type guys. Then I had a little kind of short blurb thing that went out on Fantasy Pros. I believe it's still up on the site. I also retweeted it out. I'm on the Monday, Wednesday, and Friday podcast here. I'm going to be participating in the CBS AL-only auction representing FanGraphs this year. That's on Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific time. So I believe that's 1 p.m. Eastern. I'm going to be doing a Facebook Live of that, and it's kind of a little trial and error thing that I'm doing because I've also got the Barfleet draft coming up. I'd like to do some Facebook Live stuff with that as well. So I'm going to try it out. If you're around on Facebook and you want to kind of see, and I'm going to try to talk about what's going on in the auction, what I'm doing with my team and things like that, and commenting on other people's teams, definitely would be kind of cool to have some people to interact with on that, so I'm not just talking myself the whole time. So definitely check that out. If you give us a 5-star review on iTunes, that really helps us out. And also, if you give us take a screenshot of it and send it to me at Fantasy Benefits on Twitter or friendsfantasybenefits at gmail.com, I'll make sure you get into a listener league or are eligible for other prizes later on in the off season. All right, that's going to do it for us today. For Darius, Eli, Dan, and myself, thank you for listening. Have fantastic baseball.